Yeah, hi guys, this is Troy,
Daniel,
and Wei Ming over here.
And we're here to talk about what we saw today, specifically in the Sony line. So we'll come back soon. Anyway, welcome to Patel Park Podcast. Remember to PPP.
Fuck you.
All right, let's go.
All right. So as we all just saw, Sony just launched their new Alpha 1, which was honestly pretty interesting to see. Like, I mean, we kind of wanted to speculate that it could be like a, you know, like an A74 or something. But I guess through all the teasers, they say that, yeah, the Alpha 1 is what they wanted to push towards. Which I guess it's nice, but have you guys like seen the price of it?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, think about it.
Okay. For our audience who do not know, the pricing, it's supposedly rumored to be around £6,400, which after conversion, £6,500. Sorry, which after conversion, is roughly about 11,800 Singapore dollars, and that's not even including import tax, sales tax, GST, and all of that. So, you're looking at roughly about easily a 12.3 to 12.4K camera.
I mean, if you round it up, just put it as 13K, you know?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that this camera is dedicated towards a more professional line, maybe even pro consumer and such, but the price is justifiable, I feel.
I would say right now, if you're looking just like the A7S III that was released, like, basically last year, right? Last year, the A7S III that was released, and right now it's like in the market for about 7K. So it kind of puts it in between A7S III and also an FX9. But FX9 is already a pure cinema camera. So it's like what they want to do, like reinventing the whole Alpha 9, then kind of make it, you know, that's full out banger, like
speaking better.
Yeah,
better.
Like you have 8K recording at 30 FPS, you have 16-bit external HDMI recording and true HDMI. Like a lot of the features when it comes to like towards pro photographers and everything is like, wow, really whatever you want, you know.
And I mean, Troy and Wei Ming are more video centric.
Yeah.
I myself is more photo centric. So for me, when I first saw it's a 50 megapixel camera with 30 FPS, 30 frame rates per second, with 15 stop of dynamic range and no blackout, I was just speechless, because to not only be able to get 50 megapixels, but to also be able to get 30 frames a second, yes, electronic shutter, is still ridiculous, because that's a lot of data to be pushing and transferring in such a short amount of time.
Yeah. And don't forget, like right now, they also finally, I mean, flash photography has been out in the market for so long, but never once have we really seen an upgrade towards like that side. Flash photography has always been like, no, it's kind of
like an additional additional way to help improve. But it has never been always up to par when it comes to like the shutter speed of like the camera, and such, and all. Like, it has never been able to shoot without having like flaws in the photos and such. So being able to see it being captured so well using flash photography, bear in mind something that has been a big struggle in the industry for such a long time.
Yeah, and I mean, since I've been doing photo for quite a while as a hobby, I've realized that a lot of high speed sync with flash is usually a maximum of about 1 to 320th of a second. So for Sony to do this, to be able to shoot at 1/400th of a second for mechanical shutter and 1/500th of a second for electronic shutter, you're gonna be able to capture at a high shutter speed and not have to worry about your light on the subject looking very weird. So it's definitely gonna be very well for people who are wanting to do sport photography in low light with external flash.
Yeah. Then let's like move on to like especially like video recording, right? you're like, yeah, I mean, a lot of people kind of speculated that 8K will be coming out, you know, from cameras that's moving on forward. 8K is a very nice addition, but I think the real big thing that they actually introduced was more towards the 4K 120. Because having that to, I mean, a lot of people always, you know, always talk about why, I mean, 120 is okay, but when it comes to 240, it's like an extreme. But you do realize that we are able to shoot at 4K 120 and also still being able to record 422 10-bit internal. That is extreme, honestly.
Now don't forget, now you can shoot 4K 120 at 16-bit external through HDMI.
Yeah, that is like, raw. Is there even a monitor that kind of supports
don't
it?
Don't even
currently?
Talk about monitor. Let's just talk about computer itself to be able to get all of that detail out just to do color grading on 16-bit.
This really annoys. Like, you really have to have a strong workstation to even.
Your M1 chip will not be able to handle it. I guarantee you.
We need the new M1X chip.
Or the M3, M5.
Yeah, whatever. You know? I mean, honestly, like, I mean, we have seen Sony produce amazing cameras in the past. I mean, especially in, like, you know, the A7 III, the A7 S3. The A9 was kind of very bulky for a lot of people to use. And now you see the form factor of the new A1. It is basically as compact as what an A7 S3 is like.
Mm.
Which is crazy with how much features that they are actually packing inside. Think about it. Like, if you're going to full rig this, right? Like, it's such a small one.
Mm.
Which means that you could just run it on a normal gimbal. You don't even need, like, a steady rig or whatsoever, you know?
Yeah.
An easy rig or whatsoever to actually do real-life productions with it.
It really does bring forth like a new horizon towards like the world of filmmaking as well. Cause like the A9, yeah, it was a good camera and all, but where would like a prosumer or like even a casual hobbyist be able to shoot videos and all with A9 without feeling the strain unless they really have proper full rig setup? Whereas like seeing the form factor of this and all, a small form factor, like not obviously not tiny, but a decent enough size and all that allows like after a proper rig and such and all, it's going to be much more like compact, much more, it makes it much easier to bring around and be able to do fast run and gun kind of shoots.
And it's like, it basically also took the FS6 and FX9, the cine profile, the cine log profile, and put it inside as well. So if you think about it, right now in the marketplace, when it comes to video production, especially like for TVs or movies, they usually will go towards like, you know, the RAIDs, the RE. But right now, Sony has shown that even at, okay, you may think that 12, 13K is kind of like very expensive, but on a professional ground, right, where rigs are going to cost you 20, 30K for just the body of a camera, it's a really big jump.
It's sort of like, you have to say, like, oh, why would I want to pay sort of like 10, 12K for this body when you can just get, let's say, like a red Helios, Dragon, yeah. Scarlet, all of these. All of these are slightly more expensive, but for video, it's like damn good. It's like cinema grade. Yeah. But at the same time, you have to see, the Sony, right? Yes, video features are damn good. But you can still use it for photography.
Yeah, which is crazy, you know, because all those professional cinema cameras is only meant for videography.
You can't take a picture. The only way to take a picture out of this is to take a video and then literally screenshot a single frame out of it.
Yeah.
And it really brings out a lot of possibilities on where, you know, the future of mirrorless cameras can go.
Mm.
Like, Sony has innovated so much. And I mean, I still want to see what the A7 IV would actually, like, showcase for us.
But
you know?
That brings forth a very good question, you know? Like, where does the A7 IV lie now? Like, is there any way for it to, like, really truly stand out after seeing an A9 and, like, comparing to, like, maybe, like, something like an A7 S3 or even the
okay, as an A7 III user myself, here are some speculations I hope and think that the new A7 IV might have. Definitely, they will try to at least have 4K 60.
Mm.
4K 60 minimum and at 10 bit. This is sort of like how low you can go for an entry level style, especially if you're releasing it this late into the whole mirrorless wall. So if they want to stick with 24 megapixels, that's actually fine. 24 megapixels is definitely a just right megapixel count. But you could probably try to improve on your video side, because most Sony users out there are hybrid shooters.
Yep.
So they're photo and video.
Mm. For sure.
So it's sort of like that. Like the A74 definitely has to make a lot of sacrifices, but it's just there to help bring the market for new Sony users. They don't want to have 4K 120 at 12-bit external or 10-bit recording, because it's gonna scare a lot of beginners away.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna scare a lot of beginners away, and then the A74 might just end up being a flop.
Mm,
oh yeah, that's my speculation on the A74.
But I think obviously they still want to make sure that there's a very very big balance, a very smooth balance when it comes to a consumer, a prosumer, and really moving on like for studio like creations and everything. So it kind of puts, I mean, the A7 would definitely fit towards the consumer target. And I still feel that the 10-bit may be a possibility. Like, it may not be like a 10-bit 422, right? Like what the A7S 3 can do, like the A1 can do, but it will definitely be something maybe at least like a 10-bit 420. And maybe with external monitor, you can do it up to 422, and that makes sense, right? Because on the A7 S3, you can output on 12-bit 422, you can do internal recording 420, right? Yeah, 420.
No, I think right now for the Sony one, it's 422.
Internal?
Should be internal.
Internal 10-bit 422.
Internal 10-bit 420.
Was it?
You search it up.
Gotta check.
But I think this is where I beg to differ, and I think there is a high possibility that they might allow, like, I'm not so sure whether A7 III is able to shoot like a 10-bit 422 internal. Nope. But nope.
A7 III is only 8-bit.
8-bit, huh?
8-bit, 8-bit with no... Okay, I'm not too sure because as I said, I'm more video, but I don't know if A7 III can do 10-bit external. This one, I'm not too sure yet.
Mm.
But yeah, this, especially with the release of the A1 and all, and with the possible future of the A7 IV, this is my own gut feeling, is that I feel that, especially if they want to showcase their new technology, and the A7 III and all did marvel a lot of us and all when it first came out and all. So, I think it's a definite possibility that 10-bit 422 internal is possible, and maybe even consider like maybe 12-bit external. Yeah, maybe.
Mm.
I think there's a possibility.
Yeah. I mean, at least to put the speculations out there, you know, for people who are willing to kind of wait, you know, because I mean, the A7S3 has been out and now the A1, then it's more of like waiting for them to kind of release towards the A7 IV, where you really bring back onto the consumer line.
Mm.
Because right now, a lot of the stuff that they're pushing out is more towards professional grade kind of doing as well. Like, yeah, the A7 S3, I still feel that it's more of a video camera.
No, definitely. Yeah, because, I mean, A7S is for video, A7R is for photo, A7 is for general hybrids, A9 is for professional, and now A1 is like...
A1 is to replace A9 in the first place.
Honestly, I was telling Weiming and Troy earlier, the A1 makes the A9 look like an entry
so but
it's gonna be intense.
I mean, honestly, if you actually compare the specs in between the A7S, like the A7S3 and versus the A1, right? Honestly, there's actually a lot of similarities. They are both able to do 10-bit 422 internal. They are both able to record 4K 120. So there's still a lot of similarities that they kind of bring over, but it's more of like they wanted to add more flair into really towards the professional grade of doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think another point that, I mean, we have to see how future reviews and everything to see, because we all know that the A7S3 actually has a dual ISO stock.
Yeah, which is one is at 400 and then one is at 12,800 ISO. Those are the A7S3's dual native ISO.
Yeah, so we aren't sure if the A1 would actually have it or not, because I think that was the really big selling point when it came to the A7S3.
Mm.
If the A and having A9 having cost so much, right? I mean, I suspect that it should have. Right? Mm. Because it doesn't make sense if it doesn't have and you are selling that camera at like 13K.
Mm.
A lot of the features are the same, right? And if you're talking about a video production standpoint, then at that rate, I see no point going for like the A1. Mm. I might as well just get an A7S3.
Yeah.
That's all right. Well, yeah. But I think nowadays, I think now in today's market, A1 would definitely be targeted towards either very high-end production houses or professional individuals. It's not going to be catered towards the prosumers already, because it's really out of the budget. Unless if you are really making a lot of money from being a photographer or being a videographer, right? Then okay, maybe you can consider the A1. But
actually, right, you actually go read up the specs of between the A7S3 and the A1, right? There's actually a ton of similarities. So like just now how I said in regards to the recording, right, the recording quality. Actually, the A7S3, you can record 16-bit external as well. It's something that's actually available. And the autofocus, the focus points is actually the same. So it brings back the question that right now we are looking at almost like a 5K kind of difference. 5Ks, you can actually get a lot of lens on it. I mean, if you're comparing for just photography, right, a photography standpoint, yeah, the A1 just absolutely kills it.
Mm.
But for a video production standpoint, right, I only see the major feature of the A1 as maybe just your 4K, you know, your 8K 30 FPS. Honestly, that's the main difference between them.
Maybe there is another thing which comes to the next thing to talk about, the autofocus.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So I think like the biggest surprise and all for all of us was of all the things that they talk about, the main thing that draws us most was the autofocusing for bird
eyes. The active eye, which I was like, at first I thought like, wait, birds are considered as animals. Won't animal IAF already be like sufficient?
Mm.
But I guess like how Troy made it earlier during the release that, and Troy Weiming made it earlier, is that birds are more
fast paced.
Yeah, they're more spastic in a sense where like
it's unpredictable.
They go up down left right, then front forward, right? So it's they probably have to take a different algorithm just for birds, so just for it to be able to react faster. As some more from the announcement, they say that it sort of calculates AF 120 times a second.
The question is, does it work on video?
Okay, I don't know. Okay, for video, it would already be active IAF.
Because they showed off the...
For the animals and
the humans. The animals and the humans, they showed off in video. But if you realize during the presentation, right, for the bird IAF, they only showed it in photos.
Mm.
They actually didn't show it based off videos. So, because if you're running it off video, I mean, that will be very interesting to see. Which means like if people who are actually doing like for nature and all this kind of stuff, right, it's going to be a very major plus point.
Yeah, definitely. And like I think a lot of like nature, like photographers, videographers and all, right, the biggest struggle will always be birds and all, like especially being a person who did animal photography for a long period of time and all, I'll say like birds are the biggest struggle because they are really unpredictable. When it comes to animals and all, like at the very most, when it comes to like the y-axis and all, like it's still okay. Like you don't have to worry so much. You can still potentially predict. But when it comes to birds and all, right, like when, especially when they're in the air and all, they literally have like all three different axes and all, right, to consider when it comes to movements. And if this really does
like show a lot of promise, which it really does already to begin with.
Mm.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will start even considering like getting this camera just for like really heavy animal videography and such.
Yeah, like let's say animal videography, professional use and all this. I mean, it all still comes down to like how much budget are you willing to actually invest on this camera. And I mean, we're still at the start of the year, you know.
Mm.
Like we haven't seen what Canon, Nikon, Panasonic, Lumix have for us.
Mm.
Especially when there's the newly speculated for the G6, right?
Mm.
The G6, the Canon USR1, eh? Was it R1? USR1.
No. The rumored? Or the
yeah, actual? The rumored one.
Okay, the rumor is the USR1.
Yeah, the R1. Then I forgotten what's for Nikon.
Nobody cares.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it is still very early into the year. And honestly, I would want to see what this whole year really shows.
Mm.
And I do want to see more reviews towards how the A1 is going to perform in a real life situation, especially when you're talking about 8K, how's the battery is going to last, how effective is their new the heat dissipation system, and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think that was the thing that I was also pretty concerned about, as much as like the A1 is most likely going to be using which battery?
FZ100.
Yeah, so yeah, for maybe like the cameras that they were using before and all, yeah, it could last them for quite a decent amount of time. But when it comes to this kind of camera and all, where there's so much possibilities, there's so much technology that's put into the construction and the production of this particular camera, how would, especially with all the stuff that is inside, would the battery be able to withstand like the toll? Would it be able to last as much as the rest? I mean, this thing can record so much at such a... Pardon.
Yeah.
This thing can record so much at such a high quality. Would the battery be suffice, or would they be able to introduce something new? Because we are talking about a smaller form factor as compared to the A9. No? Would it be strong enough?
Okay. Let's go on talking about the the new Xperia Pro.
Yeah, that was not okay. Something that I expected.
Do you guys know how much they're actually retailing
how much
on B&H?
Probably like 3,000, 4,000.
2,500. For just, okay. It is a phone, right?
But, actually that's pretty
good. I mean, 2,500, you have to look at it as a... Comparing with something like an iPhone or a Sony camera, kind of Sony one, Apple and Samsung phones, you know, it's actually not that big of a difference.
Mm.
I just want to make it clear to our audience that we are recording this in a live, in a live setting, you know, so anything you hear in the background is what we cannot control.
Okay, so anyways, going back to it, right? So basically, this is the rundown of the specs. Like what they actually wanted to showcase was the 5G, the sub-6mm wave. The phone is actually like a 6.5-inch. The cinema wide Sony likes to do their 21:9. It's a 4K HDR AMOLED. But the good thing about the display, since it's actually being able to use as a live monitor, it actually has the BT2020 color space. Right? Yes, DCI P3 100% color gamut and a calibrated D65 white point, which means it's basically a pure monitor. Like you can basically just use it as an external monitor and it's still a phone as well.
Mm.
And it really creates a lot of like opportunities on how like what they wanted to showcase for live streaming and everything. I mean, it's really a kind of a nice direction to go towards. But at the same time, it's like, oh, this phone's 2.5K, you know?
And also like what you talked about before, like we started the podcast and all, this will be a dedicated phone for this camera, or at least like for this potential like series of cameras and such. But only this phone is other like
companies going to potentially do it, I highly doubt so. So that means that we only have like maybe one, or maybe after them, perhaps they like may release like a more basic version of
I mean, because right now it's just limited to, this is basically the only phone that can do it. But I still feel like okay, it's nice that you can use it as an external monitor, you can use it for live streaming, but you only can use it as a 10-bit monitor. You actually can't use it to record 16-bit or whatever, which means,
I think would be quite a challenge as well.
I mean, definitely it's quite a challenge, but I feel that if people are going to pay the price like a 2.5K, right? Then why don't they might as well just buy a real proper external monitor that will support 16-bit? Like external monitor that records in 16-bit, allows external SD card recording. All this makes much more sense. And you wouldn't want to run this kind of rig as like a live stream rig. I mean, it's kind of overkill, honestly. We have seen people who run even smaller, especially when you're talking about live streaming. You don't want to make your rig very big and very bulky. Right? You just want a very compact size and it's easy to kind of bring about, to move about between places and such. The AA1 is kind of, I feel like it's kind of overdoing it for that sense, because would you spend, we're talking about just the body itself is a 13K, right? If you're going to add a proper lens onto it, you're going to add a proper rig onto it, you're going to buy this phone, because you're basically talking about maybe like 17 to 18K with audio equipment and everything, just for a live streaming rig. And I just feel like it's kind of out of like too much. Like they already introduced the ZV-1, which is meant to be a super compact, you still can use it for live streaming and everything, but then this is just, I feel like it's very over the top. Right, if let's say that they actually provided, like, I mean, we don't want to overdo stuff and say, wow, your phone that allows you to record 16-bit and all this kind of stuff, but if they're heading towards that direction, I just feel like why not make that a possibility. Like if that phone's gonna cost 3K, 4K, right, to actually make that a possibility, right, I still think that that is a better direction to head towards, because which means that you still can use it on a professional setup, you still can use it to directly record, do it for professional shoots, and still directly export out for your clients or whatsoever to see a quick and easy, in a sense a quick and easy fix to review, to see how this. But if the main purpose is more towards live streaming, I just find that it's way too costly.
Yeah, I think like, and this is my take on it. I think like the Xperia Pro, like, I don't think it's really justified for its pricing and all. I think it's a bit over the price and all for what it provides. I mean, yes, it's good. It's good that you're able to use it as an external monitor and all, and be able to see at like 10-bit and such. But like, other than that, the other selling point is a phone.
Right.
And does it justify paying so much for a phone and all? Like for me, I'm a heavy Lumix user and all. Yes, they don't really showcase like the app in a way that allows me to like embrace it as what the Xperia Pro will be able to see, like, which is essentially having an external monitor and such. But I don't have to pay much for it. I can use any Android phone and all, and be able to use the software provided for Lumix. So in this case, you know, such a novelty phone and all, something so specific to its use and all, dedicated to the Sony line, only being able to like do for Sony and such and all, it begs the question and all, it's like, it doesn't feel justifiable for its price range and all, and what it's providing right now. Yes, it's a nice gimmick and all, but is it going to be enough?
Right, it's like 2.5, and we're talking about 2.5K euros actually. If 2.5K euros for the phone, which means when you translate it to SGD, you're looking at almost,
don't worry, I got it, guys. give me like 2 seconds. 2500 euros.
Oh no,
there's an extra zero.
How much is the phone?
Well, that doesn't sound good.
How much?
Let's just say you have a choice. Either you can buy the phone, or you can buy a Sony camera.
Oh, wow. So I guess you're talking about the A7 III at that kind of price point.
A7 III, and still have enough money to buy a G Master lens afterwards.
What?
You're looking at $4,000.
Yeah. What? So like what we saw during the whole live streaming thing, right? The whole premiere video, they have showed that they want to move towards like allowing the consumer to kind of see that you can actually mount this phone up and make everything together. But the thing is, like, why are you going to spend like godforsaken almost, yeah, so body 13K, the phone 4K, you haven't even calculated your lens, you haven't even calculated your audio equipment, you haven't calculated your rig, your gimbal or whatever.
Your freaking memory card, for God's sake.
Yeah. So like if you really calculate everything in, you're looking at maybe like
easily spending at least close to like 25 to 30K,
yeah,
for the camera, for the whole setup, and like and a phone.
And to live stream, like seriously?
It's overkill for a live stream.
Because let's just put it into perspective. Right now an A7 III, right? Market price brand new, just for body only, you're looking at about 2.5 to 2.6. Okay, might be a bit more expensive in certain areas, but I would think that the average is about 2.5 to 2.6. And you, let's say you still have 1.3 left, you could buy an 85 1.8. You can buy the 20. No, okay, you don't exactly have that one, but like you can buy a camera with a very good glass for a price of a phone. And that phone, yes, obviously you have that phone feature and stuff like that. But if you're buying it for the A7S, for the A1, you're going to use it for what? External monitoring, as well as be able to live stream from a camera.
Yeah, but like, dude, they made the ZV-1 so that people actually can use it as a very portable live streaming rig. Dude, if I calculate everything, right, you can buy an A7S III, you can fully deck out the A7S III and buy another ZV-1 and just use that as a portable streaming setup, you know?
It's sort of like, how to say, it's like, when Samsung came out with the Galaxy Fold 2 and it was priced at 3K, close to 3K, everyone lost their fucking minds. Like, 3K for a phone is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But now you're saying that Sony is going to be selling a phone for about 4K SGD. That
is not foldable.
It's not foldable, but it also begs to differ the logic that, right, you're spending it on, yeah, on the display, on the amazing display, that you can actually use that to showcase to your clients and whatsoever. But wouldn't a monitor do that as well? Right?
Plus, who's going to show your clients your video work on a phone?
Yeah.
It's not professional. It's when it comes to like small form factor monitors and all, it's meant for mainly the cinematographer's view, like the DOP or the camera operator and such. But if you want to use it as something to show your clients and all, it defeats the purpose and all. You would rather have a proper external monitor that is much larger, maybe like 22 inches and all.
You still have to take into consideration that you actually need to tether that phone onto the camera just to use you know?
Yeah, and oh my God. And like 4K for a phone.
If you tell me that the phone inside is having a memory of a CFast card, like you have like, you have like 2 or 4 or even like 10 terabytes.
If you're telling me you can use the Xperia Pro, right, as an SD card where you can record externally to the phone, then I'll still say 4K. Maybe 4K.
The internal storage size is like 512 GB.
Oh, that's not.
It's like 512 GB.
Especially when you show like 4K 120.
And you can only put like a 1 terabyte SD card inside. And the read speed for SD cards are not that fast.
Micro SD cards.
Yeah, it's micro SD cards.
I mean, if I'm paying 4K for a phone, I better make sure I'm getting 6G on that phone.
Maybe Sony is going to release a new like micro SD card that will fit with it.
No, you know what's the worst part? So they have the 5G nanometer wave inside.
Yeah.
But you know what chipset is using? It's using a Snapdragon 865. It's not even using the 888 that is right now in the market that's fully supported for 5G.
Huh. So basically you're paying.
Get the camera, don't so get the much. Phone.
Yeah,
don't
yeah.
bother. take the money that you will get a phone
to buy a lens.
You can even buy a proper monitor and still have maybe like
still have about 3k left. You can buy you can buy an Atomos 5, Ninja 5. And
screw that, you can buy a Shogun at this
point. You can buy a Shogun already.
I thought the Shogun was a bit of a lower model than the Ninja.
No, the Shogun is the larger one.
It's a better one.
The Ninja is actually meant for more like
it's the consumer side there, right?
Not exactly. I'll say it's very consumer at this rate, at the current rate that it's going. And it has the ability to record externally as well. So yeah, don't get the phone. Unless like the phone sign shows like some additional specs that we weren't informed of that truly lets it shine out as compared to everything else that is but in the market.
They have to do something amazing to be able to make $4,000 justifiable.
Really? I don't think it is. I think it's true.
If they're telling me they're selling this phone for 3K, maybe a lot of people can still close one.
Yeah, you can literally just buy. So the Atomos Neon, which is the 17-inch version, that is 4K SGD, and not 4K USD, and you can use that to record a goddamn 16-bit output.
So it's, pay a little bit more, you get a bigger display, especially with the ability to record externally. You know?
Everybody has a phone. Everybody already has a phone. What makes you want to buy a second phone just to be used as an external monitor? That makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
For what? Having a HDMI output? No, that's bullshit.
Like, people would just rather buy a monitor than to buy that goddamn phone, and it just doesn't work in a use case scenario, man. It just doesn't make sense.
Unless for some reason they like have a large-ass phone, which obviously in what right mind and all will you have like a 17-inch phone?
Already, if you're telling me that Apple wants to make an iPad into a phone, I'll tell you they're fucking stupid already.
Yeah, which obviously they won't. But I'll be surprised, but they won't.
I mean, Samsung had that old tabs where it was literally a phone, like a 7-inch phone.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's dumbass.
Yeah, like the Atomos Neon is a 4K monitor, 17-inch. You still can record on the display is also 10-bit DCI P3 color gamut, and you still can use it to record into external SSD.
You know what? You might as well just get the Apple XDR display and fucking just mount it onto your camera.
It's just ridiculous.
It makes no point at all, to be honest. And also, like, when it comes to like people in the film industry and all, like, what small HD Atmos and all, like, that's more than enough for like when it comes to viewing your like footage and all. If you're gonna show your clients and all, you're not gonna show them on a small screen and all. And like, oh hey, look at my 4K phone and all that can show my footage and all at such a small resolution and all. Like, it makes no point. You might as well get like, if you're using it for yourself and all, you might as well get a small HD, you might as well get Atmos, and you'll be more than enough when it comes to like professional level and all. If you're going to show it to clients and not get an external monitor that's much larger.
Yeah, I mean, right now, honestly, like, we just want to see like how the A1 really performs in terms of real life usage. Right, if it can't perform as what, I mean, from Sony themselves, we have seen that their cameras do perform to whatever they stated, which is a good thing. But on a real life use case scenario, would you actually would you actually pay like 13k just for a body, as much as it's compact, but features that are similar to A7S III? And
okay, I think coming from us, since we are considered hobbyists, spending 13k on the body makes no fucking sense. If you're telling me right, you're giving me 13k right now to spend on the body, I will literally just get a Komodo.
Yeah,
I'll just get a Komodo straight away. For me, in my mind, getting a Komodo makes more sense than getting the A1. Mm. But I mean, that's because we are speaking from a hobbyist standpoint.
Mm.
Okay, somebody, some of us who is just doing this for the fun of it, and hoping that in the future we can pursue this career. But at this current moment, hell no.
Yeah.
Maybe if you ask like a director if he thinks the A1, okay, actually, even a director would say the A1 is not even worth it.
Don't worry, I'll talk to my director tomorrow when I'm having class to see what he says about this camera, honestly.
He'll probably say that, like...
Oh, but we're just running Blackmagic Pocket 6K. We're running the Sony FX6. Why do we need this?
it's a nice camera. And we're not going to lie about that, but... For like people like us and our hobbies or even prosumers and all, it's very unlikely they will get this camera. Maybe like professionals might even consider this camera, but like with like all the other cameras that are potentially out there and all, this might be just something that's nice to have.
Mm.
Or it might not be a necessity, or like something that's truly like beneficial.
Yeah, if you're buying the A1 for video and video only, from my inexperience kind of thing. from my lack of experience, I'll tell you, if you want to get serious into video, Blackmagic Ursa 12K would definitely be a lot better for you guys. Okay, because I only just remember what the Blackmagic is because today I went to Cathay, the new Cathay shop at Peninsula, and they had the previous gen, the Ursa 8K, I think the Ursa 8K, previous gen. They had it on display. I'm like, "Dad, this looks beautiful." And then it also made me remember about Blackmagic's new release last year for their Ursa 12K. And then let's not forget 12K footage being able to run on a what I think it was a 2018 MacBook Pro, not even an M1 chip, a 2018 MacBook Pro with Intel and AMD graphics, being able to still run smoothly without having to run proxies.
Mm.
So if you really want to get serious into photo, seriously into video, you're better off with something like a Blackmagic or Red. If you want to get very serious in photo, A7 R4 will definitely be a lot better.
Yeah.
The A1 is sort of, it's sort of like how it's sort of like Sony's way to flex.
Yeah.
Like we know we're good. We're just gonna put everything, all the over the top items into one camera that in a sense kind of makes it unusable for a lot of people. Like not don't say unusable, but the features will not be able to be used.
Yeah.
Like
when we say okay, yeah, with what the A7 R4 is now. Would all this, like the 30 FPS, no blackout, honestly, all these features, I could see them possibly coming on the A7R 5, right? It's something that they'll definitely bring it down, step it down. Obviously, maybe it won't be like 30 FPS, then maybe just bring it down by a little bit. But it comes to a point where all these features, like we've seen from their past cameras, all these features, they'll slowly bring it down to their lower end lines as well. Then it makes this A1 being sit at a very awkward spot for those that are even considering to buy it in the first place. Because it's like we are literally at the start of 2021 and there's like a very long way and many people out there already have their own rigs, right? For them, this is more of like Daniel said, for them to flex. But at the same time, we all have to see what this year will actually bring out in terms of what the camera technology is.
Yep.
Sony has been superior in the market. It's a good thing, right? Especially in their mirrorless line. But obviously, other cameras out there are slowly catching up in terms of like the features and functionalities as well. Though they don't make the best mirrorless cameras and like in terms of lens choices, all this, they don't really have a large selection of what Sony actually has. I think as time goes by, if you're looking like 2-3 years down the road, right, mirrorless cameras is already starting to become mainstream, and it'll only continue further push forward for all the other brands out there.
It's hard to say. Another thing I also realized during the announcement is that they were saying that how that new viewfinder is 9.966 million dot. And how it's like the highest resolution. And to think about it, okay, currently I'm trying to find, but I think, yeah, okay. So like it roughly has the same amount of pixels in the viewfinder as the A7S III. And let's not forget it refreshes at 240 hertz.
Yeah.
So I mean like
I mean, it's a good thing, right? For a photographer, it makes sense, right? For a photographer, the high FPS and everything, it makes sense. But on a videographer's standpoint, you wouldn't even be...
If you're a serious videographer, you will never use the on-camera screen. You will have an external monitor.
Yeah, so it's like, it's kind of redundant. Unless if, let's say, you can use it as a separate screen, you know. So having it as a separate screen so that you kind of view it, like more of like towards the nitpicky details, like if you can zoom into a particular area to just see that certain area while your external monitor is actually like showing the whole image. I think those kind of stuff makes sense. But if it's just going to be like, or it's just going to be like a full display and your external monitor is still going to show the full display.
And another thing I just realized, the A1 doesn't have the flip out display as the A7 III.
Yeah.
It's the A7S III. It has the same display as the A7R4 as well as the A7 III. So I felt like
it's outdated.
Yeah, it is outdated.
Even the A7C also has a flip out display.
Honestly, we'll have to see.
It's too early to soon. Probably give it about a week for some reviewers to release a few things out there.
And then slowly showcase what the A1 actually has in store for us.
There will still be a lot of time. Like we say, it's still early in January. In 2021, there's still going to be a lot of potential cameras that's going to come out.
And they never really announced the release date of this camera or when pre-orders will start.
Oh really? It's already on BA. Are you sure? It's on Jan 27, 10 a.m. ET time.
That's today. I think that was the announcement.
This announcement.
Oh, well, that's for the pre-orders.
Pre-orders open, but when are cameras gonna come in? End of Feb.
Yeah, I mean, give it a month or two, I guess. So yeah, it's like it says available to purchase on Wednesday, Jan 27. Yeah, I mean honestly,
we're gonna have to see, man. And like to take a note, any YouTuber you see talking about the camera, the majority of them are still YouTubers.
Mm.
They're not professional videographers or photographers.
Mm.
They are YouTubers who make. They are YouTubers who make content for YouTube.
Yeah.
If you're telling me a director were to give me their review on the A7S III A1, I will believe them more. If Michael Bay did a review on this camera, it will probably make more sense.
Don't be bothered.
Okay. I was kind of like reading up the specs and everything that's out on B&H. The body itself only weighs like 737 grams, which is actually damn light, honestly. So, it's a nice camera, but we'll really have to see on how it is, honestly.
For sure. Well, anyway,
I think that's it for tonight. Today,
yes. I think pretty much this is our whole podcast. It's just all about the A1.
It's just
today's podcast was just more of giving our thoughts and ideas on the new A1. And I think we all can agree that the A1 is definitely a beast of a camera.
Yeah, definitely.
But we all are having our doubts about, is it able to actually sell well? You know, because it is. It comes to a point where when things are so good, it actually, in a sense, almost becomes harder to sell because you are just limiting that market by a lot.
Yeah,
putting all of these professional features into, in a sense, a consumer body, but then the price of like a professional cine camera, you know, it's sort of like, it comes to a point where, how to say, you're buying this camera to do video. You might as well buy either an FX9, a Komodo, a Red. If you're buying this camera for photo, you might as well buy the A7R4, the A9 II, which are more focused on those areas. If you're a hybrid shooter, this still makes no sense at all.
Like zero sense at all, honestly.
You know, if you're a hybrid shooter, you can still get an A7R4, do everything you need to do. Get an A7S III, still do everything you need to do. Get an A7 III.
For the A7 IV.
Yeah.
Hopefully, they release it soon. Hopefully, in the middle of this year. I mean, I'm sure everybody out there, even professionals, are also waiting for the A74 because it's about 3 years old already.
Yeah.
It's a 3 year old camera.
It's time for a proper upgrade, man, for that.
It's bound to have an upgrade. Mm. And I feel like since Sony is taking so long to release the A74, it just makes people wonder, are they setting their expectations too high already? With all of these new features coming out, they're expecting some of these features to be in the A74. And if it doesn't come out, they're just going to see the A74 as... A74 is not worth it
really. Yeah, then people just buy the A73 instead.
A73 or the A7i, the A7S.
Like even the second-hand market right now, if you're looking just for a body, it's like actually about 2K. Just for
1.9 till about 2.9.
Yeah, and that's honestly, if you are someone that is like planning to go into filmmaking, into taking photographies and all this, honestly, that's a very decent price. Yeah, and you still can get like a proper, let's say if you get like a 24 to 75 from Sigma?
No, from Sigma it'll be a 24 to 70 f/2.8.
Like you could generally just, you know, you have bigger budgets to kind of work out with lenses and all this kind of stuff. And in the future, if you do really upgrade, right? I mean all your lenses.
Sound.
All your lenses is still going to work fine and everything. So I just feel like honestly we just wait.
Yeah.
We'll just have to wait and see how the outcome is and see what people think about the A1.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
Alright, we've come to the end of the podcast.
Oh, this is a longer one.
Yes. We just rambled so much on the A1, but okay. Hope you enjoy listening.
And stay tuned for next week for a new podcast.
Yeah.
Who knows what it could be? Could be about anything, man.
Yeah, we could even be talking about the new potential 14-inch MacBook.
What? Well,
Who knows? Anyway, this is Troy.
Daniel.
And Wei Ming.
And this is Patil Park Podcast.
BPP.